Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat cold tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500. Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy, specifically more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that Leela Q's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. Leela Q has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use Leela Q for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount.
Today's cool fact of the day, which we know that's what you're waiting for, right? Is that if you've ever wondered why you can't tickle yourself, there's an answer. I wonder about this at night, right? And researchers think they figured it out. It's that when we intend to make a movement, the brain sends a command to the muscles to make the movement, and it also predicts what you're gonna feel before it actually happens. When the prediction and the sensation are the same, then the brain says, oh, I was expecting that, and it subdues the nerve response. And that's why you can't tickle yourself, but you could ask someone like Stella Grisant, who's our guest today, to tickle you maybe. Stella, welcome to the show.
Thank you, thanks Dave.
I doubt you
cool
actually-
Cool fact.
Thank you. I doubt you offer tickling services in the suite of what you do, but I was just putting you on the spot there.
Oh, no, I don't offer tickling
services.
Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of six different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit arrcled.com.
For longtime listeners of Bulletproof Radio, we'll recognize Stella's name because Stella's been on the show before. And she's the founder and CEO of Woopah, which is W-O-O-P-A-A-H, because, well, spelling Woopah is not that easy. And she's basically helps people and companies flourish, for lack of a better, more bulletproof word. But Stella's kind of a badass, as in Google, Johnson & Johnson, Columbia University, and a bunch of other universities are using her stuff for workplace culture and engagement and well-being. And I invited Stella on the show today to talk about how you can quit hating your job because so many people hate their jobs. And here we have an expert in the Bulletproof community who knows what you can do to, even if your job isn't what you want it to be, to at least stop hating it. Because when you stop hating stuff, you actually have a lot more energy. The other thing about Stella that's cool is she's one of the first 150 people in the world to get an actual master's in applied positive psychology from the University of Pennsylvania, which, as everyone knows, is superior to like Harvard and places like that. you might guess that I went to Wharton, by the way.
I know.
and what's that other school with pine trees and stuff in the Bay Area? I don't remember some other school. Stella, you've been like all over the media, like the Today Show and Vanity Fair and ABC News and stuff. So you're pretty much famous about how to like make people happy. So like, how can people be more happy?
Oh, good question. So, well, when it comes to work, so we'll talk about work in general today. Mm-hmm. When it comes to work, there's lots of people who we know are miserable at work. And what I find is that without even knowing it, subconsciously, people are sabotaging their own happiness at work. And it usually happens in three ways. So the first way I find people are sabotaging themselves is by complaining. So I know that maybe your boss is a total prick, or maybe your commute is hellish, or maybe you have way too much work. But when we complain, we are actually activating what's called our negativity bias. And our negativity bias is our brain's natural instinct to focus on anything that's bad, wrong, or threatening. And it's kind of like Velcro to our attention. So when we're complaining, we're basically just activating that negativity bias. Our attention can only stay on all the stuff that sucks. And then we can't really see the bigger picture. And our attention is so narrowed, it's kind of like we have tunnel vision. We're not able to see solutions outside of, you know, the shitty stuff we're focusing on. So when we complain, we're not just stating what's wrong, we're actually infusing our observation with negative energy and emotion. So I could very easily say, hey, you know, it's hot outside today. Or I could say, oh my God, it's so hot. So we can say the same thing. We can still note when things are not right, but we don't necessarily have to feel them entirely and bring ourselves down.
What happens if someone says, oh, this heat is killing me? Like, what's the effect of that?
Well, I think words are really important. Words are really important. I'm very cautious of my words, so killing me, I'd rather not say that. I am, but I would say, oh, this—it's hot outside. I mean, that is a true observation. It is hot.
I've been working with my kids on this. You know, they're 6 and 8, and let's see. The other day, my daughter was running a lemonade stand, and she'd picked up from a babysitter. Like, whenever someone didn't stop, she's like, "Oh, those annoying people." And I'm like, Anna, like, you could say that those are annoying people. You could say, I don't like it that they don't stop. Like, which of those is true? And she's like, well, actually, you know, and then you go into it. And that led me to just thinking about how, like, every day you tell yourself all these lies. And yeah. Complaining is usually a lie, isn't it? I mean, I'm asking you that, but it's my theory.
Well, I don't know if it's a lie, because I think truth is very subjective.
Fair point.
So it's, what do you want to choose to believe, and what's going to support your well-being at work? So if you want to be happier, you can choose to believe that people are annoying, or you can choose to believe that they seem like they're in a rush and maybe they have something going on. Maybe their own daughter is doing a lemonade, is selling something, you know, on the street and selling her own lemonade, and they're trying to rush to get her lemons. Like, we don't know what's going on. We never know the full picture. So if you just, you know, if you observe the objective experience and don't make any assumptions about what you don't know, then you're probably going to stay in a more lighter place.
I always try to assume that they have someone in the back of the car, like with projectile leprosy, and they're driving to the hospital really quick, because then you're like, man, I'm glad I'm nowhere near that car. Right? And you win, right?
I kind of do the same thing. I haven't thought about the leprosy piece, but I'm like, oh, maybe their wife is giving birth right now.
That's probably a more positive one, but you know.
Yeah. So I would say what I do for people who, one of the first things when people start to work with me, I tell them to go on a complaint vacation.
Nice.
So take 7 days, observe your thoughts, and just notice when you're about to like leap into complaining, and just say, hey, I'm on a complaint vacation, and divert your attention. It's not about ignoring what's wrong, because if there is a problem, you want to pay attention to it, but you just don't have to infuse it with all this intense, vile, anger, negative stuff. Negative emotion isn't bad, but we don't have to compound it, essentially. Does that make sense? Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to double down on it. I hear you there. Let's talk about your work happiness method specifically, because that was kind of the first step there. We're like, okay, stop complaining about your job, right? So, all right, let's say, and I'll tell you about a job I had. A lot of people don't know this. Okay. For 5 years, I put auto parts in boxes. Okay, this was the most horrible job ever, but it paid really well during summers. And I started a t-shirt company, and I like managed to pay my tuition, but I worked my ass off all summer, like wearing, you know, picking up boxes of heavy stuff. And that was like my emergency fallback. So I could have complained a lot about that job because, well, let's face it, it wasn't the best job ever. In fact, I probably did complain a lot about that job. So what should I have done to be more satisfied with what was just a hellish job in a 100-degree warehouse full of auto parts?
Great question. So Amy Rozhensky from Yale did some really cool research on how we can think about our jobs and or our work. And she found that there's three ways that we can look at our work. One is just to see our work as a job, as a way to pay the bills, which is what it was doing for you. Another way to look at it at work is it's part of my career trajectory. So I'm doing this in order to grow, gain power, influence, make more money. The third way that we could look at our work is as if it's a calling, and so that it's contributing to something bigger than ourselves. So any job, even working in a warehouse, moving auto parts when it's 100 degrees, you can find a way to look at it differently. And so, you know, if you want to think about it as how is this contributing to something bigger than me, and how is this helping the world or someone be better off, maybe those auto parts are, you know, helping people move from place A to B. And that's important because there may be someone who has leprosy who needs to get into a hospital, or someone who's giving birth and they need to get to the doctor really quick. So you are playing a vital role in helping people, helping economies, helping the world move. So I know that may feel like a little bit of a leap, but you could also bring it down to, hey, do I like my buddies at work? Do we like crack good jokes? And do I look forward to talking to people, you know, at work? So maybe it's even just helping your coworkers smile. That also is making a difference. So you get to choose how you look at your work, and you don't have to be saving lives in order to feel a sense of meaning.
It's very true. No one would eat if we didn't have auto parts, right?
Yeah, I
can tell you at the time, the general feeling was, all right, this is paying for college, so it doesn't really matter how much it sucks. But I'm bored, so I'll just make up stuff. And this is, I was young, I was pretty egotistical, and I ended up, they had some award for process improvement, where like if you could suggest a way to do something better in the warehouse, and there were enough suggestions, then everyone would get a bonus. So I was like, I could do that. So I made 20 suggestions in a month, and everyone got like a 5% bonus that month. And then they then they changed the program to make it harder. I'm like,
So then you made it worse for everyone.
I gamed the system, so everyone got a bonus, and then it didn't work. But some of them were good, but. In retrospect, if someone had told me the advice that you're giving me right now, then I'd say for people listening, this is really legitimate advice. No matter how absolutely crappy your job is now, there's a reason someone's paying you to do it. And because it contributes to something, it contributes to something, it contributes to something. So if you're playing a small part in doing something meaningful, even if it's just a small part, someone had to play that part. It's better to look at it that way than it is to say, this job sucks and, you know, my boss is evil and blah, blah, blah. Those all may be true, but you don't have to dwell on it, right? Is that basically what we're saying?
Yes. And I think another important point is if we blame our jobs for being unhappy, like if you say, oh, my job sucks and my life is miserable, then it is very likely that no matter where you go, if you switch jobs, you get a new role, you start your own business, you're going to find yourself miserable again, unless you do some inner work and figure out what you really want. So it's like no matter where you go, there you are. And so it's really critical if you're finding yourself blaming your job for being miserable in general, that you do some inner examination, because it's not your job. There will always be something. And probably what you're facing now is not the first time you're feeling what you're feeling. So it's really important to look within, because often we're just trying to escape what's uncomfortable and what sucks. And we're not really doing the hard work of looking inward and being like, what do I really want, instead of what do I not want?
So this is starting to sound a little bit airy-fairy to some people listening to this today.
Sure, I understand. I know your audience.
Okay, how do I not know what I want? Like, you know, I want like plenty of money. You know, I want a whatever, you know, I want a Tesla and, you know, grass-fed beef and lots of butter. All right, so there's more to your point than, you know, I want some physical things. Are you asking people what they want? Are you asking, like, what's their mission? Like,
yeah.
It seems like, well, want is such a varied thing. Like, I want all sorts of stuff, you know?
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah, so want, I would say, is what is it that's going to bring you a sense of deep sense of flourishing, well-being, fulfillment? So it's a little bit more bigger than, you know, what's my desire right now? And in positive psychology, and when we talk about flourishing, there's actually 5 main drivers to flourishing. So one is feeling good. One is just like positive emotion. Another one is feeling really engaged, feeling present, feeling in the flow, which is what you did when you gamed the system. You're like, how do I take this miserable, boring situation and make it fun for me? Another one are the relationships that we lead, and then a sense of meaning, and then a sense of achievement. So that's kind of like, if we bundle those things, then we have a sense of well-being or flourishing. And so when it comes to, when I say, what do you really want, I'm really referring to want with a capital W, which is what's really going to make you feel most alive. And a car may do that for you in one aspect of what it is that you're seeking, but there's probably more to that.
A Buddhist perspective, or just more someone who's done some time doing their meditation, or just some inner awareness work, the vast majority of what people want with a small W isn't what they want with a capital W, the way you're defining it. So in other words, what you want probably isn't what's going to make you kick the most ass or flourish or thrive or whatever the right words are for you. How would someone listening to this, sitting, let's say, in a dead-end office job, just listening to Bulletproof Radio every day, which is the only bright part in their otherwise completely horrible existence? Just kidding. No complaining here. But okay, so let's say someone has, you know, a dead-end desk job. They're not happy with it. And they're like, okay, I don't know what's going to make me happy, but I know that I'm supposed to want all these different things, and you know, I want the Tesla even though I don't have to drive very much or whatever. What would you tell that person so that they can figure out what's going to make them flourish versus make them, you know, just like have another big screen TV or whatever it is?
Yes, good question. So the very first thing I do with my clients is I have them do some vision work to give them permission to really dream. And I take them step by step and guiding them through a series of questions to help them see that well-rounded definition with the capital W. So, you know, some immediate answers when you ask people what comes to mind, they'll think of the car or they'll think of dating a hot person. But we need to make sure that you're looking at things holistically, and often you're not aware of what you need to be asking yourself. So I have a step-by-step vision exercise, I call it the vision generator, to help you actually begin to see what your life may look like when you are feeling totally alive with a capital A. So for anyone who's watching, I am happy to make that available, or listening, happy to make that available to you, because I think this is just essential to really helping you in your very first step to developing your definition of success and your sense of well-being and happiness. So I'm happy, Bulletproofers, for you guys to do that. And it's a 30-minute exercise. And can I tell them where they can get it?
Absolutely, yeah. This isn't an infomercial, but you're giving away a free thing for people. So absolutely tell them where they can get it.
Yeah. No, it's, I mean, I this is the first thing I do with people. It's if you go to workhappinessmethod.com/vision. So workhappinessmethod.com/vision, and you can download the vision generator, because that's the very first thing you should do. Instead of just focusing on what sucks, really generate, you know, give yourself permission to dream and to really see, you know, what it is that's going to make you come most alive. So, and when I have, just to give you a sense of some things that I have people consider, it's not just enough to be passionate about what it is you're doing. So passion is great, and everybody thinks you have to be passionate. That's true. That's one piece of it. But you also have to think about, you know, feeling purposeful, feeling like you're contributing to something bigger, thinking about the people you're going to be working with, the people that you're serving, thinking about the process in which you do your work, and thinking about, you know, the money as well. So those are all important. So I guide you in kind of figuring that out. Yeah.
If that sounds a little bit woo-woo to someone, it's not. So I do this program called Strategic Coach with Dan Sullivan, who's taught. Do you know Dan?
I know Strategic Coach. Yeah.
Okay, and so this is, I'm in like their senior entrepreneur program that has a different name, but there's guys in there running companies with like hundreds of millions of dollars in revenue. Like these are like entrepreneurs. I'm like, can you tell me how you did that? Like, this is amazing stuff. And Dan's for 40 years taught people. He has a similar exercise where he's taking these really, really successful people and saying, like, what do you want your future to look like? And how do you visualize it? Because otherwise, you don't have a direction. And like, when we do 40 years of Zen, the neurofeedback program that I do with CEO clients, same thing. You sit down, you put electrodes on your head, and you visualize that future, even if it's incredibly big and badass, because that's the direction you're going to head. And you've got a free exercise for people that does the same thing. And if you haven't done this, and I'm just saying for everyone listening, if you've never sat down and done like, well, if I had everything where I would want it to be for me to be really happy, where is that? What does it look like? And even more importantly, what does it feel like? Then you're totally missing out. So download this tool, and we'll put the URL in the show notes. In fact, say it one more time. Great. So people can get it. What's the URL? Just say it one more time.
It's workhappinessmethod.com/vision.
Okay, so we'll make sure that everyone can get that kind of thing, because I'm happy you said that. So if you're in a crappy job, the first thing to do is be like, if I wasn't in my crappy job, but if I was in like the perfect state of kicking ass, what would my life look like? What would it feel like? And then you can chart a path to get there.
Yes. So okay. I can tell you what we would do next. Do you want me to tell you what?
Yeah, please.
Okay. So after you create that vision, which really stretches your imagination, I tell people this is a practice to just like massage your imagination, because so often when things suck, you're thinking from a very limited perspective and you're not seeing all the possibilities. So after you create this sense of possibility, you're excited about what life can look like for you, then what we do is we scrape that vision, and what we want to do is look for what are your values. And it's essential to know your values, because those are the guiding principles for your behavior. That is what influences how you make decisions. Often people don't examine their values, and basically they're living by values that they've absorbed by, you know, their colleagues, their peers, their parents, their community. And so you're making decisions that are not aligned with what it is you want with a capital W. And you're just running on automatic. And so it's really critical to make conscious decisions about what it is that matters to you. How do you want to exist and operate in this, you know, and at work, in life. And so so we go through a 7-step process to help you figure out your values. So that you want to figure out your values.
What are the three most popular values?
There's no...
there has to be an answer.
Okay, I wanted to say there are no popular values, but I have noticed some patterns.
Yeah, what are the big ones? Okay. Like, in other words, can I copy off your sheet? I'm kidding.
Well, here's the thing. When I have people do values, I have them, you know, do a kind of a brain dump of their values, but then we go and we rank them. That's really important to rank, because you're inevitably going to find a conflict like that, you know, where you have to choose. And so you need to know how you rank things so that you can make a decision and make a right decision. So I find what surprises people all the time when they do this work is how much people matter. So I've had a woman, very, very successful senior exec at a very well-known technology company, who was just like, get me out of here. She was ready to quit, ready to give up her stock options, which were about to vest in 4 months. She's like, I will leave money on the table. Get me out of here. But she did not know how to start thinking about what she really wanted. She's like, I've never asked myself what work will make me happy. I'm just really good at what I do, and I've just found things that I do well. And so what we did this work, we did the vision work, we did the values work. And what she was so shocked to realize is how much people matter to her, and that what she really wanted to do was work with nice people who were smart and interesting. And once she realized that, it set her free, and she was able to actually then go find another department to work in, and she didn't have to leave money on the table, and she's really happy. But she didn't know that before. She thought it was the industry. She was ready to leave her whole company, but she just needed to find a different group of people that she liked.
It's interesting that a lot of people don't know what they want with a capital W, because they've been told what they're supposed to want, and they believe that they want what they're supposed to want. Can you like unpack that for me? This is coming from your, you know, your blog and all that. Like, so when I'm preparing to interview you, I look at that stuff. So what is this, like, wanting what you've been told to want versus wanting what you want?
Yeah. So, well, when we think about being successful, it usually involves, you know, working really hard and making a certain amount of money, having a certain type of title, whether, you know, you're an exec or you're a founder, you have a certain type of, you know, car, certain type of like lifestyle. And so you work really hard to achieve that. And most of the people I work with are very quote unquote successful. And they're like, they arrive, they have it all. And they're like, why am I still feeling like shit? And so when there's a disconnect between having it all, quote unquote, of, you know, that version of success where you work hard, you have a good title, you're being promoted, you have the stuff in your life, you may even have the people in your life. So from the outside, it looks like you have it all. But on the inside, you're like, is this it? Because this isn't enough. And so the reason why there's a disconnect is because most likely you are not operating in alignment with what's most important to you. Now, what's so cool is that when you do this values work, you're able to shift perspective enough to look at things differently. You may realize that's all you needed to do was to look at things differently, and you're able to actually appreciate all you have.
So if this sounds a little bit esoteric to people, I'll apply this to my own life, right? When I was 26, I was totally miserable, and I made $6 million. And I was like, that should make me happy, except it totally didn't. But being in Silicon Valley at the time and not having done any of my own like self-awareness work, I'm like, well, obviously that's because I just didn't quite have enough money. $10 million is definitely going to do it. So I lost the $6 million 2 years later because I was like stubborn and like just not being aware of what I had and what I like knew, oh, I'm probably set for life. I'm going to go get a degree in something I don't know about. Like, you know, life's going to be a party. But all I was doing was working, and I was truly not happy. And a reframing would have probably changed what I did financially because I hadn't done the kind of work you're talking about. So I would encourage people at any age, if you haven't sat down and really figured out what, you know, what values matter to you and, you know, what your mission is, that sit down and do this kind of work. Going back, I wish someone had told me all this crap.
Me too. I went through a huge Netflix addiction, like lost tons of business opportunities. I mean, felt sorry for myself for a good amount of time because I wasn't doing this inner work myself. So I wish I had it too. Eventually I did, but.
I thought Netflix was a vitamin. You're telling me it's addictive? Oh my God. I got to change that blog post.
Oh my God. I went through a period where I watched 30 Rock and Frasier twice.
Oh, twice. Wow.
Because I was avoiding the truth, and I was afraid to admit to myself that I was unhappy in how I was doing what I was doing. And so I had to really take this medicine myself. And that's why I'm so passionate about it, because I don't want people wasting their time, wasting lots of money in, you know, going off, investing in different businesses, or even finding a job that, you know, you don't like. And it's a lot of wasted time and energy when you're just doing unexamined stuff. So
it takes a lot of courage, though, to do what you're talking about.
Oh, my
so
God.
You were sitting there watching Netflix, and it's just easier to watch 30 Rock than it is to sit down and be like, oh, my God, I'm not happy. But to be happy, I'm going to have to quit my job, you know, change my relationships, you know, move to a new country, whatever the heck it's going to take. Most people don't muster that kind of courage. I mean, the evidence we have is that they don't do it. How would someone listening to this going, all right, number one, this show is irritating me right now, it's a good sign. That means that we're making you pay attention and some part of you is uncomfortable, which means, oh, funny, you're probably not happy. Yeah. Okay, yeah. So let's say that they're still listening. They didn't just like throw their iPad across the across the office there. So how do you muster the courage to then say, all right, I'm going to actually sit down and without lying to myself, talk about or have that inner journal, whatever you do, to say, this is what actually makes me happy?
Well, I will say it is hard, and it's hard to do alone. So, I actually got my own coach, and you have your coach, and I think we all need someone who can support us in this journey and help us see the forest through the trees. Cause it's hard, even when you're very self-aware, to do this work alone. So I have a coach, and I totally believe in getting a coach. And so I think being on the journey with someone is very helpful. And you know, obviously that's what I do. So that's one thing. But also I think once you have the awareness that something's got to change, it's, you know, you can deny it, but it will get louder and louder.
Oh yeah.
And right. It will get, and like you faced this, you lost the $6 million. Right. And so like you probably kept getting these signs that something's got to change. And even your story physically, like, you know, the gaining the weight, and like, you're like, you had this aha. So our bodies are often really good signals that something's got to change. I work with a very successful CEO who has a multi-million dollar business, and her carpal tunnel is so bad. Her doctor's like, you should not be driving. And so that was her awakening to something's got to change. So you can choose to be proactive and listen and choose to take action, or you can wait until the signs get really loud. And so it is courageous, but you have that courage. Everyone has the courage. Everyone is a lot more amazing and powerful than they give themselves credit for. And so if you just make the decision, I'm really going to look at what it is that I really want, capital W, and I'm going to do something about it. That is the first step.
And you'd recommend a life coach or an executive coach as a way to hold you accountable to help you on the courage front?
Yes. Yes. So, I do think that's a good first step. Friends are great, but, friends and family, even though they love you, sometimes have an agenda.
And they're not trained in that.
They're not trained. Yeah. Yeah.
So you have a coaching practice, and I'm assuming you're still accepting new coaching clients. So people listening, I'm sure if they connect with what you're saying, they'll reach out to you, and we'll have your URLs all over the place, which is why you're on the show, right? Like that's totally cool. And I support your message that says get a coach. I've gone through a good number of coaches when I was younger. Mostly it was like one meeting kind of things, because I didn't seem like they got it. And now I'll plug the Bulletproof Coach Training Program. We just launched this thing, and I'm working on training coaches. We're doing our first round of coaches. This actually in about 10 days now, and at the head of the Bulletproof Conference, we're training 160 coaches in the mind body stuff. And it's not exactly the kind of thing you do. Different, and a lot of them are already coaches, but the whole point is that For me, one of the things holding me back when I was 26 wasn't just that I had, you know, misconceptions about money and I had like anger and all that kind of stuff. My biology was jacked. And to do the work that's required to perform in business or in life, to do that kind of work, if your biology is all jacked, I just found it didn't work. So I'm looking at a holistic kind of thing where people can apply like
that's great.
Performance enhancement with executive coaching and for something different. But I just,
that's awesome.
I appreciate that you talked about the value of a coach. I hadn't even thought of bringing up the Bulletproof Coaching thing, but for me, this is something that I've been doing for the past few years to just a few people, and I found I didn't scale. And I want to ask you, like, are you training other coaches with what you're doing? Like, how do you scale? Because if you have all this knowledge and you've learned how to do it, but you can only take, you know, 5 or 8 meetings a day before you burn out. Like, how do you deal with that? Like, I can help more people then.
Yeah, well, one way is that I do group programs. Cool. So I do, so where we get a group online, and so we do a live training, and they get to ask their questions, and so that's one way that I'm scaling right now. And training other coaches is definitely something that I've been thinking about, but haven't been. I'm not there yet.
Got it. It's tough because there are a huge variety of coaches, and I'll ask you another question because your answer has to be biased because you are a coach. But this is something that no one ever told me, and I'm not sure I know the answer either, but for someone listening, they've just heard what we talked about mission and having your vision and understanding what you want, and you're like, okay, the way to have the courage to do this is to get a coach. How the heck do you find a good coach? And I don't mean like look for certification, but like, what do you ask a coach to know if they're good?
So freaking hard, because there's very little regulation. I mean, there's definitely institutions and training programs. Good question. I think that you want to be clear on, the thing is, I think a good coach will help you clarify what it is that you need help on. Because sometimes you don't even know what you need help on. I think you want to ask, you know, what experience they have, who their ideal client is, how, if they have a program, if it's off the cuff, if maybe you want to talk to other clients of theirs, what do people ask me? I think also, for me, it's important to like my coach and respect them, but for some people, they don't need to like, but they just need the respect. So, I also think, is your coach living and walking the walk? So it's really, for me, it's very important that whoever is giving you support is embodying that kind of information themselves. So your coaches, I'm sure, have gone through and all the, you know, the training, but they're also probably have been following you for a long time and doing the Bulletproof Diet and doing all sorts of work on themselves as well. And so I think that it's important to really embody the information that you're sharing and not just tell people something that sounds good.
So you want a coach who walks the talk, which is important. I'm thinking about that. Like, another very successful guy is Dan Pena, who's been on Bulletproof Radio. I was recently at his 70th birthday, and he kind of lives or walks the talk. He lives in his own castle, Guthrie Castle, with, you know, a row of sports cars parked up front. And, you know, wears a kilt and basically is the quintessential, like, James Bond kind of guy. But he'll tell you flat out, like when he works with someone, he's like, I don't want you to like me. Like, I'm going to hold you incredibly accountable. You give me your weekly report. You don't give me 3 weekly reports. You're fired. You're not my client anymore. And just, like, you know, very, very much in your face like that. But he's had a lot of really successful mentees over the years, including some really big names. So there's that kind. My take on this is that if you're going to work with a coach, you interview them, you ask them questions, you look at their style, but I don't think the decision on working with a coach is as much of a cognitive decision as it is.
I
like,
agree.
It's like a feeling.
I agree.
Like, I feel good about this coach, and I can't tell you why. The fact that you feel good and you can't say why, good, it was a feeling. There isn't supposed to be a why for that feeling.
I'm with you.
You can honor that, right?
I totally, that's for me. And also, for me, my own coach, I admire my coach. Like, I want to emulate my coach. Like, I want to be her in 5-10 years. I think anyone who I attract is, they generally are like, yeah, I like her, I trust her, and they go for it. So, and for some people, they want the tough love, and so that's why they go, you know, they're attracted to, you know, your friend who's on the show.
Yeah.
To Dan, yeah. So I think it just depends on your style. And so talking to people, and also, does your coach make you feel like shit in a bad way when you're off the phone? Like, if you walk away from the conversation feeling really bad about yourself and really down without a sense of possibility and hope, then I don't think that's a good sign. So pay attention to your energy level. Even if your coach is giving you some tough love, do you feel a sense of like inspiration, like I can do it? Or do you feel in a heightened level of energy? Or do you feel like worse about yourself and kind of dread getting on the phone? So
the coaches who I've found most successful for me are generally pretty nice. Like Jeff yeah. Spencer has been on the show. He's for 9 years in a row, he was like the team like wellness guy for Tour de France teams, and has been a coach for a long time. And it's a similar thing there. Like he'll tell you the way it is, but he doesn't tell you in a way to demean you,
yeah.
right? And that's really important. And I think it also depends. Maybe you need that sort of like a little spark of anger in order to take action, and your coach mm-hmm. should know that. But I guess it's personal, right?
Yeah, and I think a good coach will help you even articulate what kind of style is most useful for you. It's hard to just say, this is the kind of style or coach I want, but a good coach will elicit that. So, because they'll ask you smart questions. And yeah, another
right.
thing is like, do you like the questions your coach asks you?
That's true.
One of my favorite quotes by David Cooperrider, who's a leader in positive psychology, he says, the questions we ask determine the reality we create. And so, do you like the questions your coach is asking?
Okay, I buy that.
Yeah.
Well, let's shift gears from how to find
yes.
a coach to get over your courage so that then you can find your mission and your values and what you want, what you actually want. You talk also about shifting your mindset by using evidence-based tools to like stop behaving in ways that you don't like or ways that block
yeah.
you. What are the evidence-based tools that release negative behaviors?
Great, 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 great. So, well, one of the things that really keeps people, I would say, unhappy, and kind of it's the second trap that I talk about, the first one was complaining, is criticism, inner criticism. So really beating down on yourself, right? And I'm sure everyone has their own inner critic. And one of the a great piece of research that came out of, I think it was in the 60s, Martin Seligman, who actually is the founder of positive psychology, got famous by doing a lot of research on depression. And one of the studies he was doing was with dogs, and he was doing a study where he would zap them, ring a bell, and watch kind of the association between the bell and the zap. And what he found happened to the dogs, after they were zapped, they would hear the bell. When they would hear the bell, they would act as if they were like zapped by electricity. Then he took those same dogs into a crate where half the floor was electrical and half the floor wasn't. And there was just like a low fence that was separating the two sides. And so he would zap the dog, and the dogs would just lay there kind of taking it, taking the hit. They kind of gave up. And what he noticed from that behavior is there is a behavior that he coined learned helplessness, which is you're getting zapped and you think there's nothing you can do and you just take it. And so learned helplessness is really, you know, this is just the way it is.
That's why we have school, to teach that to kids, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, most schools do that.
Sorry, I'm not going to complain.
Yeah, no. So learned helplessness. So what he then also decided, well, there is, you can retrain your thinking. And he calls it learned optimism. And what we do in learned optimism, what's really important is to, the first step you want to do is identify, it's A, B, C, D, E. So that's a way to remember it. So the first, the A is identify the activating event. So let's talk back about traffic. And that guy just was a total prick on the road. That's the activating event. Like someone just like sped by you and cut you off. And so you're like, ugh. So the activating event is the person was rushing and cut me off. So then you want to, B is what is my belief about that experience? That guy is a prick.
Right.
That's a belief, right?
Right.
C is what's the consequence of believing that he's a prick? I'm noticing I'm feeling really angry, like I could choke someone. That's the consequence. D is you want to then disrupt the thinking, or you want to rethink, basically. But there's a D word. I'm forgetting it now. But you want to dissuade yourself from the original belief. So is there another way of looking at the belief? So, okay, so if my belief is that he's a prick, is there another way of looking at it? Well, maybe he has the leprosy. Yes. Person in the back, maybe his wife is pregnant and is giving birth. Is there another way to look at it? And then E is notice what happens when you are thinking about this other possibility. Notice what happens energetically to your to you. So noticing your energy. And if you're noticing a little bit of lightness, that's great. So by noticing how your awareness shifts, how your body shifts when you're thinking about the other possibility, you're basically helping yourself rewire thinking and your beliefs. So that's kind of a more, I don't want to say complex tool, but it has several steps to it. But you can also just practice gratitude.
So the example of the guy in the car.
Yeah.
I used to have a lot of road rage, and it was like, you know, how could you cut me off? There's no space in front of me because I'm right on that guy's bumper, and who do you think you are anyway? And I'm not like that anymore. However, one of the things I did is I would sit in my car and I'd put a heart rate variability sensor on my ear, and then I would drive. And every time someone would cut me off, like it would turn red, which is basically my nervous system saying, like, I need to kill that guy.
Yeah.
And it took me a couple of weeks, I would guess, of just kind of driving in Silicon Valley traffic before I could finally just be like, all right, every time someone passes me, I'm not going to let it turn red. I'm going to make it turn green, which means that I kept myself in the parasympathetic, relaxed state. Yeah. And it really changed. It changed it. So now I just don't care if someone passes me. They probably won't pass me because I like to drive fast within legal and safety limits, et cetera, et cetera, all things aside. But the bottom line is that it was costing me a lot.
Yes.
In order exactly. to be pissed at these people. And I wasn't aware that it was costing me anything.
Yeah.
Right. And it was just the mindset shift that we started talking about today that made that clear.
Yes. And I think that's so valuable, is that the frustration, the anger, holding on to that is just costing you. I mean, it doesn't matter to the other person who zoomed by. So, and that biofeedback is so helpful, really helpful, especially since most of us need some kind of some support in helping us grow our own self-awareness. So I think that's a really cool tool. The other thing that you can do is practice gratitude. And I know, you know, people hear that all the time. And one thing people often complain about around gratitude is that they are not feeling it authentically. They feel like they're faking it. And the thing with gratitude is sometimes it will feel a little forced in the beginning, especially if you're wound up or angry or miserable. But the more you practice and the more you look for things to be grateful for, the more that muscle kind of grows and expands. And so you may want to experiment with what kind of ways of being grateful most resonate with you. For some people, it's writing three things down at the end of the night. For others, it's actually appreciating someone verbally. There's you could also, what I used to do when I lived in New York City and hated my job, I would get off the subway and I'd say, okay, from the time I get out of the subway to the moment I step inside work, I'm going to do a gratitude meditation. So all I'm going to do is say, I'm grateful for, and fill in the blank until I arrive. And I noticed by the time I arrived, I was feeling more soft. I was feeling a little bit more positive, but it took, you know, a good 7 minutes to get there. So there's different ways of practicing gratitude. That's really been studied in terms of transforming people's attitudes and happiness.
We're in total alignment on gratitude, and it's the most important biohack of all, is just to consciously do it, practice it. But the opposite of gratitude are things like guilt and shame. And you have something you do called the boundaries blueprint, where you actually acknowledge that, especially as people get started in their career, I certainly had this. So you're young, you're smart, you're working hard and you have skills. You probably have less skills than you think you do because you haven't had time to learn them, just between you and me. Okay, but still, you're going to stand by the value of what you're doing, and it is valuable, and you're putting yourself into your work. But you feel like you're giving more than you receive because you're getting entry-level pay because, you know, you're doing all these things and the boss doesn't recognize it, et cetera, et cetera. And this happens very commonly when you start your career. But no one that I've become aware of, anyway, other than you, talks about how actually people feel shame about it. Like, if I'm doing such a good job and I'm not getting recognized for it, then, like, I'm a bad person and, you know, I'm not lovable. And all these weird messages have nothing to do with reality, but that's the way we're wired because we're, like, big hairy apes.
Yeah.
What is your recommendation for people who have that weird dynamic? Or can you go into it more? And, like, what's your boundaries blueprint? Yeah. Just walk me through it because it's interesting.
Yeah. So the boundaries blueprint is, it's actually a little bit different.
Okay.
It's more about creating boundaries so that you can operate in alignment with your values, because people are going to constantly ask you to do things, or you're going to find yourself in situations you don't want to be in. And you have to really stand very grounded in what's important to you, or you're going to feel like shit at the end of the day. And so boundaries blueprint is about helping you identify what are the boundaries you need to maintain and how to actually have the difficult conversation to really be upfront about your needs without it feeling hostile, or without it feeling shameful, or without it feeling, you know, it may feel awkward in the beginning because, you know, lots of people consider themselves non-confrontational, and that word bugs the crap out of me because
it makes you want to kill them, doesn't it? Okay.
So when I hear non-confrontational, what I'm hearing is a really nicely packaged excuse for not speaking your truth. Because you have needs. Like, I was talking to this woman the other day. Again, ready to quit her job, change industries. She's a nurse. And she's like, I've done yoga teacher training. I want to go into yoga. I don't believe in the Western medicine anymore. And I think I need to just go into that. And I was like, really? Well, tell me what's happening. Tell me what it, you know, I walked her through the vision exercise. And then when she started talking about what she wanted, there was no mention of Eastern medicine, no mention of Eastern anything. And what we realized is that all the things that she was describing had to do with people who respected her, feeling appreciated, feeling recognized. I was like, you don't have to switch industries for that. You know, it sounds like you're having an issue with the people at work. And people were walking all over her, giving them all extra shifts. She was like taking on all this stuff. And she's like, well, I want to be helpful. And I'm not a really confrontational person. I'm like, that's fine. You don't have to be confrontational, but you have to speak your truth. Because if the way you are being treated is actually forcing you to want to go seek another job, you know, I'm sure if you could just have a conversation and say, here are my needs. I need to do my shifts. I need to do my work. I need to feel recognized for what I'm doing, and I'm feeling a little overwhelmed when I'm taking on, you know, Nancy's extra shift. And that's making me really want to reconsider whether or not I belong here. So a boundaries blueprint is really what we do is we get very clear on, you know, where it is that you feel like you're a little vulnerable, and vulnerable is not a bad word, but where it is that you feel like you're compromising yourself so that you can really stand strong and get your needs met and do it with a level of authenticity. Because we're not doing anybody any favors when we're avoiding the truth and trying to make someone else feel better, sacrificing our own needs.
So going back to the beginning of our conversation, you don't want to be complaining about stuff, but when stuff actually does suck and you're not just complaining about it, you need to tell people that it sucks so they could fix it, or you can fix it, or so that you can take action about it, right?
Exactly. And so it's a very different thing to walk into, you know, first of all, most of the time when we're complaining to everyone else other than the person who can directly change our situation. Mm-hmm. Right. The other thing when we're complaining, we're expressing the suffering instead of stating the facts. And so if she were to walk into her boss's office and be like, I can't take this anymore. Nancy just gives me all her crap to do, and I'm the victim here, right? That would be complaining. She could also say, you know what? For the past 7 days, I've actually worked an average of 4 hours overtime, and that's making it really difficult for me to be focused on my job. And I really need things to shift in order for me to show up and be really effective.
Well, that makes a lot more sense. Yeah. Now we're coming up on the end of the show, and last time you answered a question. I'm going to ask you the same question this time, but you already forgot your answer last time.
I did. I don't remember the question.
That's okay. Last time you were on episode 91, and we're above episode 250. So this was a while ago. So people have to be like long-time listeners. They need to go back and download some of the early episodes in order to hear you. And you don't have time to do that right now. So here's the question, because you probably forgot the question too. Given all this stuff that you know and all the just your general life experiences, if someone came to you tomorrow, say as a client, and they said, look, I want to be better at everything in life, like I want to kick more ass at everything, what are the three most important things that I need to know?
Okay. Oh, good. Okay. Three most, I want to kick ass. The first thing is to listen to yourself, know how to hear yourself, which is an art. And that's why I'm telling people to do a vision and really kind of do the inner examination work. Because when you can hear yourself, then you can guide yourself in the direction of using your strengths, being in alignment, acting in alignment with your values. And when you're doing that, you really are flourishing. So listening to yourself. The second thing to be really... I don't think I said sleep, but I'm a mom. I've had a daughter since I've spoken to you last.
Oh my goodness, you're a new mom.
Yeah, I'm a new mom.
You don't look like you've aged 10 years, and that's what normally happens when you have a new baby. So, wow.
Yeah.
Good work. Man. Good work, Stella.
Thank you. I read your baby book, by the way. That was really good.
Thank you.
Yeah. So... This is a result of
of not having it.
Sleep deprived. I would say get your rest.
Yeah.
And sleep is part of that, but also when you're resting, to really rest.
Like checking Facebook is resting, right?
Exactly. That's what a lot of people are like, I'll just check Facebook, or for me, I'll just watch Netflix, and that's not restorative. To be completely honest.
Hold on. If it's Breaking Bad, it's restorative. Come on.
Well, you know what? It depends. And that is my argument too sometimes. You have to know whether or not you're escaping or really restoring. So it is a day-by-day, episode-by-episode kind of reflection. But so to really choose to be off when you're off.
Yeah.
Not contaminate that off time. And what would be my third piece of advice to be like super amazing, powerful, effective? To really appreciate and connect deeply with those you love, and to also connect deeply with those you don't. Like the person who's checking you out of the grocery store, to really look them in the eye, ask them how they are, really mean it, and see if you can find a moment of connection. Because great book, we don't have time to talk about it, Love 2.0, Barbara Fredrickson, leading researcher on positive emotion, talks about how our body experiences love. And the truth is that love is available to us all. It's momentary. It can happen with a stranger in a moment. It's about having an exchange of positive emotion and connection. And so to just tap into the love that is all around you already, and to really connect, because our relationships are the number one predictor of our happiness. When we feel connected, even at work, if we feel like we have a best friend at work, we're 7 times more engaged. So our relationships really matter. So really to connect deeply. And I have a feeling I might have said that.
That sounds familiar. Because here's the other trick. I didn't write down those things. I mean, they're in my show notes, but I didn't look at it either. I just wanted to get your fresh take. And you got your fresh take because you're a new mom. So.
Yeah, fresh take. Get some rest.
So Stella, where can people find out more about your work? Tell me about the latest URLs and all that sort of stuff, and I'll make sure to put the URL for that free tool that you decided to give people.
Yeah. Well, I am updating my website, which is woopa.com, WOOPAAH.com. But I think that probably the most recent example of the coaching work that I do is on workhappinessmethod.com. So, if people download that tool, then I'll make sure to also send them some info on how they can get more info if they're interested. Yeah.
Stella, thanks for being on Bulletproof Radio.
Thank you. Such a privilege and honor to be back.
If you appreciated today's episode, you know what to do. Go get yourself a coach. It's a really good idea. I'm not kidding. Even if you're working at, say, Starbucks as a barista, you can always upgrade. And the way you start doing that is by doing it by getting a coach. And there are coaches who will work with you even when you're just starting out. They're not going to be $500 an hour because that's not even reasonable. But just having someone who helps hold you accountable, whose job it is to hold you accountable, because that's not your friend's job. Your friend's job is to be your friend, and it's different. So go out there, find a coach, or maybe even decide to be a coach after you've spent some time kicking some ass, learning how to do it. Get the training and then become a coach, and you'll probably be a better friend too. So thanks for listening. Have an awesome day.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.